This is John Abrams, and this is The Variety Artist, episode 46. I just got back from CAX, the Conference of Variety Family Performers. I learned so much from each and every lecture. Heck, I have 6 full pages of notes that I'm going to implement this year. Better yet, I met different variety artists from all over the world. Shout out to Tim Yu from Australia, Michael and Wally from Belgium, Yasu Ishida of Hawaii. I even got to hang out with people I've only met on Facebook and fans of the Variety Artist podcast. There was a huge showing from my Kadabra SoCal peeps, but most of all, I'd like to personally thank Steve Axtell and Mark Daniel for putting the whole thing together. Thanks, guys. You did a terrific job. That brings us to our guest today. I was blown away by all the lectures at CAX, but Annie Benanni, the balloon storyteller, had some especially great information, and now she's agreed to share even more here on the Variety Artist podcast. Enjoy! Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. They're offering you, the Variety Artist, a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at thevarietyartist.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Just go to thevarietyartist.com/book right after this podcast and get your free audiobook. Now, let's start the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Not only is she one of the top balloon twisters in the country, she's also one of the best library and school performers in Southern California. And she's one of my favorite people in the whole world. She just got back from lecturing at CAX, the Conference of Variety Performers. Known as the Balloon Storyteller, Variety Artist, I give you Annie Benanni.
Hello.
Hello. Annie Benanni. Full disclosure here, Annie Benanni is a good friend of mine. Where did we meet? We met at that showcase, right?
Yes. The first showcase I was at, I believe it was 2005.
Oh.
Because that was the first year I did library shows here in Southern California. Because Buster and I tried to make all of our trips to see each other to do with work. So we could always take them off on our taxes. We called it tax deductible love.
Wait, was he living here?
He was. He grew up here. He's lived here his whole life except for like a year and a half that he doesn't talk about much.
Oh, and then you were living?
Colorado.
Ah. So what made you decide to make the big move? Was it Buster?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Well, one of us had to move. And I liked the market here better than the market in Colorado. So, and you know, I love Southern California because anything you're interested in is happening, and usually it's happening live.
Between LA and Orange County, we have everything here.
We really do.
So that first day that we met, I had a little booth, and then here's someone I never met before sets up a booth next to me, and I say to myself, there's somebody who's doing something different because you had balloons with you, but you weren't just twisting like a lot of the folks that I had seen before.
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing?
Balloon storytelling.
What is that?
Well, it's where I'm the narrator. The kids are my actors, the kids that I bring up on stage. And then the audience does all the sound effects. And the balloons are the costumes and props.
Mm.
That took a little explaining to the librarians. Even after I did my showcase spot, they said, so are you just going to stand up on stage and make balloons and tell jokes?
Yeah.
No, did you see what I did? It's such a new concept to them. It's not anymore. It's perfect for the libraries and they all know what I do. But back then it was so different.
I had been doing those showcases for a number of years and had never seen anything like it.
Yeah. I didn't realize I was a trailblazer.
Yeah. You kind of were. You kind of are.
Accidentally.
You know what I thought I'd do today? We're going to mix it up a little bit. Anybody who's listened to my podcast before knows that I ask all sorts of questions. We get in conversation and stuff. But on my Facebook page, I put every single time I interview a new artist, I put on there that they can ask me to ask questions of our artists. So you had so many questions, I thought instead of me interviewing you, I would have the fans interview you.
Way to delegate.
That's a lazy way to delegate is what it is.
Yeah, outsourcing at its best.
So that's what I thought we'd do. So I have a ton of questions for you, all from big fans of yours. And we'll start with Regina Martinez. Regina Martinez is known as Silly Sparkles out of Austin, Texas. She says, ooh, one of my favorite people in the whole world as well.
I think people are going to think we paid these people.
Here are her questions. She actually has two, so we'll start with the first one. This is a question I had too. Annie, why storytelling and balloons? Why did you decide to tell stories with balloons? Why not just stick to one or the other?
Well, it came naturally because I've got a theater background. Mm. So when I started to, and I started with just balloons, where doing parties and going, doing restaurants. I did a lot of that in Colorado. It just came naturally. Like, you start telling a story about what an animal can do, or somebody wants to, can I have a this? And instead of making them a little sculpture, because my skills were limited at the time too, I would make them into whatever it was. So like, I want to be a Viking. All right, make a Viking hat.
Okay.
And an axe. They would just get ideas on stories of what they would do. So that's how it started. And it made sense because I'm just such a theater nerd. I always, always, always want to be more interactive. And also there, I wasn't that funny. Everybody says, well, just, you know, tell a bunch of jokes while you make it. Like, I can't remember more than three jokes at a time ever.
Yeah.
Which is weird because I used to memorize entire scripts and I still do. I was really intimidated by needing to be funny. And so I would just talk to kids, and it's amazing. If you talk to kids, it is kind of rare that somebody actually has a conversation with a kid when their parents are there.
Yeah, no kidding.
If you want kids to like you, just pay attention. And it's amazing how well that works.
So you're doing line twisting and you're doing this Viking kid. How did you transition to that and say, you know what, I'm going to put together an entire show?
Well, I had been thinking about doing a show. Then I met Buster. He was teaching like how to do a show. He kind of mentored me. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a lot of time, spent a lot of time together.
A little bit.
Yeah. A lot of time on the phone. Then I realized I didn't really want to do a regular type show that everybody else did. I had also seen, taken a class from Larry Moss, the amazing Larry Moss, and he did a class on balloon storytelling. Also, Jimmy Leo did too, but Larry's was the first one I saw. And then I also saw Alan Gouin perform. Mm-hmm. And I actually went up to Alan afterwards. He performed in Colorado, and I said, I loved your show. I can never watch you again because I'm afraid I'm going to steal all your stuff accidentally. Yeah. So I really literally did not see him again until Twist and Shout was in Rochester a few years ago. I'm really glad I didn't see him again because I developed in a much different way than he did, than his show. And as much as I love his show, I really like what I'm doing too. It was a really smart idea.
Yeah, people can go both ways on that. I was in your school in that I had a lot of theater background, but instead of seeing a bunch of magicians and copying what they did, I used my theater background, just like you used your theater background, to create shows around that instead of creating it around what other magicians do.
Right. And that's one of the best ways to make your show unique is don't watch other people who do the same thing you do. Right. So if you're a magician, don't watch other magicians for ideas. I mean, it's good to see them and, you know, learn from them and everything. But if you're looking for new ideas, go watch some other type of show or look at another type of art or variety arts or whatever. And your stuff is going to be much more unique and much more rich.
Yes, absolutely. All right, we're going to go to Regina's second question. She says, I've taken your classes, picked out a story I want to tell with balloons for my summer library show. What's next? How do I know if my ideas are good enough?
Every idea is good enough. Hmm. Well, not every idea. I can think of a couple. I know Regina, and she is sometimes critical of herself, and she is just brilliant. There's a way to take a story and adapt it for the stage. You look for action. Just anything that makes a good kid's story is going to have a lot of action in it. Mm-hmm. And then you learn after a while what kind of things fit. Fairy tales are a really good place to start.
Oh.
The old fairy tales, not Disney fairy tales, because Disney fairy tales, they add so much. It's really hard to find what the essence, the through line of all of it is.
Mm.
You look at just the major parts of the story and figure out how you can adapt that to kids moving around on stage.
Oh, yeah.
The more you can get them to move with simple instructions, not like, I need you to do these five things now, because nobody can do that, not even grownups. When you get on stage, you get a little weird. It's really, really easy to freeze up or and stuff like that, especially for kids. So you want to look at the major plot points in the story and see if they're going to translate well to stage.
Mm.
That's a good place to start. And the fairy tales are a really good place to start, not only because people already know them and it's fun to see a new version of them, but the stories are very clear. Not all the fairy, you don't want to tell Grimm's fairy tales unless you're working with adults.
It's named Grimm for a reason.
You know, I wonder if that's the history of the word, because that's actually their last name.
Yeah, I realize that.
But I wonder if that's where Grimm came from.
Yeah, because some of the endings of some of those stories are very grim.
Yep. Oh, and they actually toned them down a little bit. Some of them are even worse.
And then Disney will twist them on their ear and make it a happy ending, right?
Oh, you bet. Yeah. Yes, because that's what we want these days.
We're going to go to Virginia Hankins, the modern day Lady Knight. That's what she calls herself.
She is amazing.
She is amazing. She does archery. She's a stunt woman. She has horse riding and training, and she's a mermaid. She does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can go on and on.
And she has a unicorn.
And she has a unicorn.
Brings it to parties. If I would have had a unicorn at my party when I was a kid, I think my life would have been different.
All right. So she asks, or she says, I'd like to know about how she's able to tell a story while twisting. Does each balloon correlate to a part of the story, or how do they connect?
That's a really good question. There's two different things that I do. The main thing that I do, like on stage, is most of the balloons are already made. And sometimes like there'll be two parts of something that come together and ta-da, there it is. Because making a complicated balloon sculpture is only interesting mostly to adults and usually only for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Anything that I'm going to use is usually made up in advance, which makes my show prep interesting. I got to make sure that I don't have a 2-hour show prep for all the summer shows. I did try that for birthday parties and small parties where every child got not only a balloon, but got a story made up, the both of us and the whole, you know, everybody there made up the story. But the party with 15 kids was like 2 hours long.
Oh my.
And yeah, it was too much because, and then that's actually where I found something really interesting, which audiences that worked with. So if I had regular kids that went to public school, the preschoolers would think this was the coolest thing in the entire world and could not make up their own story. Mm-hmm. As soon as they got into first grade, they looked at it as like, no, this is work. This is what we do in school. This is a party. I'm not doing this.
Uh-huh.
But homeschool kids loved it. And I thought, what is the difference between homeschool kids with the way they learn to read and write, or really just to be creative, and the way public school kids? And I realized, this is my theory, I have not checked this theory against anybody else's, but homeschool kids tend to look at things as everything is a lesson. You figure stuff out when you're a homeschool kid. When you go to public school, they tell you what to do. And then writing becomes, can I read your writing? Are you going to be able to use the right grammar? And they just get overwhelmed by all that stuff. So that's actually why my school show, the tagline is called Making Stuff Up. Because writing is just making stuff up. We do that every day.
Yeah.
And if you can get out of the thing that everything has to be perfect, I'm like, spell everything wrong. I don't care. It's a draft. It's for you. Get your ideas down. That's what really matters.
And it takes the pressure off of them.
It certainly does. We make up a story during the show. Whoever writes it down, I love when they say, hang on, how do you spell that? I don't care. This is a draft. So it really, I don't know. I don't know if teachers are as excited about it as I am, but every once in a while, I'll see somebody just really nodding their head when I say, it's just making stuff up. You know, your draft, make a messy draft. The draft is for you. And then there's that one teacher like, yeah, okay. And the rest of them are just glaring at me. I don't know.
Or on their phones.
Right? Yeah, on their phones. Or
that's my favorite thing.
The best compliment I can ever get from a teacher is when they brought papers to grade and okay. then they don't grade the papers because they're watching the show.
Yeah, I love that.
That's my favorite. Then I know my show is interesting enough.
Or they'll catch themselves a half an hour in. They'll be like, oh, shoot, I have to grade these. Oh, no. Because yeah. they're so involved in the show.
That's the best.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go to Yasu Ishida. And for those that don't know who Yasu is, he is the magic story artist out of Hawaii, originally from Japan, I believe. He says he's terrific. He's has an amazing lecture, has an amazing show. He says, yay, Annie, I loved her lecture. Yay.
I loved his.
All right, he asks, what is your favorite balloon story and why?
That's really hard. I have a lot of them. I think it depends on the situation. It depends on the age of the kids too. But my very favorite one is the one from the book that I wrote because it turned out it was based on the Let's Make a Splash at Your Library. Mm. And it ended up being a story about a mad scientist who's trying to take over the world by controlling the world's weather. Yeah. And it's goofy. I think you've seen it.
I have an autographed version.
You do. I forced it on you. I remember that.
That's right. I love that.
But I think because it's just, it's perfect for stage for what I do. And it's also, I'm really proud of it. And it started me writing books and that's a big deal. I don't know. That's my personal favorite. But again, it really just depends on the age of the kids. So I wouldn't want to do that story if most of the kids were like preschoolers because it wouldn't work. It's too complicated.
Sure. A follow-up question to that is that you created the show, or you and the kids that you were working with created the show, and then you converted that into a book. How has that changed how you present yourself to schools?
I'm still experimenting with that. It depends on the region, I think. So here, if I say I'm an indie published author, they go, oh, well, she's not good enough to be regularly published. I'm like, no, I just don't like to work with other people like that. I don't want anybody to be my boss because I've worked for myself for 20 years. I just booked myself in New Jersey randomly in March. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah. If we get snowed out.
Oh, that's right. Huh?
Yeah. I didn't think about it until winter came and I thought, oh, so like, so what's your snow policy? Well, but I was talking to the librarian who booked me and I said, you know, here, I think there's a little bit of a prejudice against indie published authors. How's the feeling there? She's like, if you went to all the trouble to indie publish your book, I read it and I like it. I don't care. Like, yeah. And it, I guess that's the attitude. So sometimes I talk about having it be an author visit because I am really bringing the book. I'm the author. The message is anybody can write a story. It's just making stuff up. And then sometimes they're looking for a reading show. Mm-hmm. So I just call it my reading show. But it really is the same thing. If they want a reading show, they get a little extra bonus when we talk about writing a book too. Oh, yeah. So yeah, it just depends on the positioning for the show. And I'm still experimenting with that. I think the balloons sometimes hold me back in schools because same thing as with the libraries, they didn't understand what I was doing.
Sure.
And with the schools, you have the added pressure of this needs to be an actual educational show. And I totally agree.
Right.
But sometimes they look at balloons and their first thought is, can she work our carnival for tips? So you kind of have to really reset their mindset.
Yeah, you have to educate them on what you do.
That's all I do sometimes. Right. I mean, not anymore in the libraries. Everybody knows me.
Sure.
Whenever I go into a new market or when I try to explain it to schools, it's really a challenge. And the people who get it really get it.
Mm-hmm.
And they love it. I just have to remind myself that it's kind of a niche market of the people who are really going to love that.
Yeah. And it's something way different. They're thinking to themselves, gee, should I hire a magician? Should I hire a juggler? What is this? Balloon storyteller?
Exactly. Buster came up with that phrase, by the way.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He's good at naming stuff.
Another little chunk of brilliance.
We're a good team.
Yeah, you are. When you, Yasu asks, When you do balloon storytelling, have you combined magic or other non-balloon props with balloon storytelling?
Absolutely. I've got one main story, and then that usually takes like 20 minutes, which is really long for a show to have one routine take 20 minutes, but there's a lot of smaller parts of that. But then I usually have about 5 to 10 minutes left over for another thing, and it's not usually long enough to do a real story. I will sometimes just put a regular magic trick in there. But this summer, this last summer, I did a thing where they could choose their adventure. It was, I can't remember what the theme was, but it's something like around the world or adventure or something.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so I decided to say, what's so cool about books is you can go anywhere in a book, even someplace that you couldn't go in real life, like inside someone's body or in space or to imaginary lands. And so I said, we're going to have all these places we could go. And then I'm going to have these cards and I'll put them in the hat and you're going to pull from the hat. And whatever one you pick is the one that we're going to tell. Mm-hmm. And behind me, I have these big bins where all my props are. And then I'll choose the bin that fits the story. Well, in practicality, that would be ridiculous to do because I couldn't always have all of the props already made because I kind of have to plan ahead. And also if you've got two shows back to back, you just take that card out or do you, you know, so there had to be a practical way to do it. So they think they get to choose, but then I already know which ones I'm going to do.
So you actually forced the story on them?
I did with a change bag, which is a hat.
Yep.
It worked out really well. Buster tells me I'm just way too honest to be a good magician because I like kind of feel bad, but it served the purpose of making them feel more involved because they got to choose. It served the purpose well enough that I didn't mind kind of fooling them.
We're going to move on to Addy Merritt, the magician known as Billy Bonkers, also out of Southern California.
Yeah.
What advice does she have to keep rebooking libraries year after year?
Mm-hmm.
Jump in.
People who work libraries, the most important thing to know before you ever start is librarians talk to each other. Mm-hmm. You kind of got to know what you're doing before you start because they don't realize that it's your first year. And if you really do something that really doesn't fit the market, they will tell everybody else and you'll be sorry. But however, if you're thinking about getting into the library market, find a local mentor. And I say local because different regions have different ways that people book. So find somebody in your area, go to their show, be friends with them, tell them what you're doing. Don't just, you know, pretend to be their friend because you want to know everything. You know, get involved in the community. And you can find out where the showcases are and all of this, but you can also find out how the market operates. So when anybody ever comes up to me and says, I want to work library shows, and we did this with Addy, sat him down and say, here's what you need to know.
Yep.
And don't mess this up for me because I'm really, really protective of my librarians.
Yeah.
Because they're my favorite people. I love, love, love working with them. And they really appreciate what we do. And so, you know, that mutual appreciation society really works out well for everybody. Things like just really kind of learning what your local area does. You can just go up to the librarian and talk to them about it. A lot of places that have a regular showcase, that's where they're more comfortable being able to book you. So if you just call them up and try to cold call all the librarians, it's going to stress them out.
Yeah.
Here in Southern California, maybe it's different other places.
You're right about the local thing because here in Southern California, we're a showcase library place.
Mm-hmm.
The way to get in the libraries is to do showcases and be good and treat people nice and all that. But I got an email from somebody who was not on the West Coast saying that there are no showcases there.
Yep.
They've used snail mail and email marketing and some different things, but it's totally different in every market is my point.
It is. And also things that you learn that here, it's really hard to put together like a tour. So if somebody wants you to drive 2 hours, you just charge them more. And yeah, if you can put together a tour, that's great. But most of the time, they just know what their budget is, and that's what their budget is. And they're not going to try to save money by calling their neighbor.
Right.
But then in Colorado, where I'm from, one of the places up in the mountains just called and say, okay, so the five libraries here, we set this up and we have a condo for you to stay at a night, and like, whoa, all right, I'm in.
Thank you.
Right. And they just do the whole thing, and it's, you know, 3-day thing. And they've got all of the travel time worked out. You know, it's in the summer, so you don't have to worry about snow. So they're like, okay, then you go here, and then your next one is here. It'll take you about 2 hours to drive to the next one, and then you'll have 2 hours before your show. And I'm like, wow, they've really thought this out.
Nice.
So it really just depends. What I also think is really, really important is understanding what the librarians need. Last minute for a librarian is 4 months. So if you don't want to book your summer in January and February, then maybe libraries is not for you.
Yeah.
Again, with the librarians talking, there was this one performer who booked, this was a few years ago, and don't worry, you guys probably don't even remember his name, and actually neither do I. He had done the showcase, booked a bunch of stuff, and then got a better offer to go on tour or something, and called them in like May.
Yeah.
And said, oh, I'm sorry, I need to cancel. That's insane for a librarian. That's the way to stress somebody out, is to do that sort of thing.
So yeah.
For a regular client, that might not be that big a deal. But for a librarian, they're nervous about it anyway.
They book so early, they figure mm-hmm. it's done.
Mm-hmm. And they love to get their paperwork right away. I use show operations from Pete.
Pete Elson.
He's great. Sometimes they are just so happy to know they're using that program because it's actually customized for them. And it's really awesome.
It is awesome.
Little things like that. Always find out what they really like. They're more concerned with you being reliable and easy to work with than they are a good show. Of course they want a good show, but if you've got a fantastic show, but then you're a really, really pain in the butt to work with, you won't get booked so much because they've got a lot going on. And know that if you're easy to work with, you will get booked. So the first year that I was here, I got booked probably for 6 or 7 shows, maybe not even that many. The one when I was traveling, part of it was because I had limited time that I was here. I remember then everybody talked about it. And then the next year I got booked almost a full summer.
Oh.
Because they're like, this is brilliant and it's a perfect fit for the library.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's more of a perfect fit than some other things that I could do. Magic is a perfect fit because it puts butts in seats. If their budget is tied to how many people mm-hmm. they get in the shows and to sign up for the summer reading, which a lot of times it is, then they're going to go for people who bring big audiences. It's also really easy for me to theme a show for any storyteller who does a lot with improv. I mean, some storytellers, they do a piece and they work on it forever, and it's really hard for them to just jump in with something new. With mine, there's so much improv in it. I have just a general structure and the improv goes with it. It's really easy to theme a show. So I write a new show every summer, which I actually combine both of the themes. There's two themes that people in the U.S. use, and usually it's regional, and the whole region will use one theme. But in L.A., we're free thinkers here. So they'll use both themes, because I travel, and so do you, all over Southern California. So one county will be using this theme, and the other county will be using this theme. And then there's that rogue couple of libraries that make up their own.
Yeah.
So I take the main two themes, combine them into whatever show that I do. So that way it fits. I'm right on theme.
So no matter what, I gotta tell you, I've walked into a library before and gone, you know, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the dinosaur show. And all of a sudden it's like, you know, Star Wars theme or something.
Right.
You look at the library and she's giving you the X across the throat thing. No dinosaurs.
Yeah. Luckily they usually have posters. You get in there and you can just switch right away. Yeah. You're the one who taught me that. I remember you were saying that you always keep a full show in your car.
I do.
Because one time you brought an animal show and found out like the day before they had decided that they couldn't have animals at their school and they forgot to tell you.
That is absolutely true.
And then you were able to switch the show at the last minute. And ever since then, I always have enough to do a show in my car.
That's happened more than once, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
What about, what did they not understand about Animal? Did they think they were going to bring dead ones or something?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. I think the PTA maybe didn't talk to the principal, and the principal gets wind as soon as I get there. And then the principal says, oh, by the way, we have this rule. Yeah, thanks for telling me. Right, we're going to do some more fan questions in a little while.
Okay.
But let's move on right now to fact or something John just made up. Sound like fun?
I'm ready.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Ah. All right, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline. You're going to tell me if it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay.
Headline number one, during a special event expo, Annie's company won best customer service for their booth. But there was a surprise at hand.
That is true.
And what is the surprise?
So the surprise is we didn't know there was a contest. Oh. I was busy like giving good customer service in my booth. So I didn't even know there were four of us that were doing it. We had kind of combined three different companies. They were off accepting the award. I had no idea what was going on. And they didn't even know because they didn't come and get me. They were just like, oh, look at the awards.
All right, next line. During her first elementary school show in California, several classes got up and walked out of her show before it was done.
Absolutely true. Embarrassingly true.
That's true. That's happened to me too.
Yes. Well, okay. I was going over time. I didn't realize how serious they were about like the bell schedule. You know, you always have bells ringing in the middle of your show and you just like stop for a second till it's done. I didn't realize that in California, they're much more strict than the schools I did in Colorado. And a lot of those were private schools. Well, private schools are like, sure, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
So I had been, you know, promising something really cool at the end of the show and then everybody had to leave. I just felt ridiculous. But thankfully, schools don't talk to each other as much as librarians do. Right.
Thank goodness.
It's good when you're starting, but then it's harder to market to schools.
Right.
Because, I mean, you're not even marketing to the same people every year, a lot of times.
Right. Because every 2 years, the PTA changes.
Mm-hmm. And some of them are roped into it. One guy said, I'm supposed to call you to book a show. I'm sorry I made you angry, sir.
You don't have to hire me if you don't want to.
I know. Well, he actually ghosted on everyone after that. I think he just really didn't like doing that. So I had to call the school and say, you know, somebody booked me. And it's really ridiculous.
Just today, I did a show where I showed up and I walked into the front office and I said, oh, John Abrams here to do bully game for you, two assemblies. And she says, today? And I said, yes. And she looks at her account. She says, I have nothing booked for you today. And I said, well, here it is. Here's the contract and here's the agreement. And here are the emails from the PTA person that hired me.
Yeah.
They arranged to do it, even though they didn't have it on their calendar. And I was happy. But I'm sure my face turned just whiter than it already is. Oh my gosh.
You know, I have instructions that I'm sure no one reads, but anybody who like wants to do it right, that's one of the things on the instructions. It's like, make sure you check with your secretary.
Yeah.
The person who schedules the NPR and your gym teacher. And
Right. Mine says principal, custodian, and school secretary. That's what mine says.
Those are the three people who run the school, you know.
Yep.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to the next one. Annie is actually made entirely of balloons. That's why people call her the balloon lady.
That's my favorite joke when somebody calls me balloon lady. It's not true.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, that's when somebody says, how long you been a balloon lady? Or, hey, balloon lady. It just cracks me up. And I'm hoping that every balloon person adopts that joke.
All right, next one.
All right.
Annie was the first person ever to be married in a balloon wedding dress.
What? That's crazy.
Like, it's crazy talk, I tell you.
I know, and it's true.
Tell me about that.
Well, so after 3 years, I moved here, and then Buster asked me to marry him at a balloon convention in front of 275 of our closest friends. Mm-hmm. Then I went to go dress shopping, and at the time, I didn't wear a lot of dresses. And so I went into David's Bridal, and it was like Stepford.
Yeah.
She's like, this is so freaky, mm-hmm. you know, and I got married at 40. So it's not like I'm one of those people who's always dreamed of their wedding or, you know, whatever. I was just really surprised that I found somebody I could put up with on a long-term basis. So yeah, I like him a lot.
He's okay. We'll keep him.
Yeah, I'll keep him. Yeah. So yeah. We came home and I said, so honey, you know, when you were joking about making me a balloon dress, were you serious? He's like, okay. And so that's what we did. I finally found one. It was like $500 and I had just moved here. Huh. So I'm like, that's not a good use of my money.
Yeah.
I'd like to, you know, pay rent. So,
yeah.
So it was fun. We actually, that was really fun, a fun way for the librarians to get to know us too, because we passed around that picture forever. We were just, that was just a thing the first few years that we were doing libraries.
Isn't that picture in the Guinness Book of World Records somewhere?
Ripley's, Believe It or Not.
It's Ripley's, Believe It or Not. That's where I saw it. Yeah.
The one with the electric guy on the front. I don't remember which one.
All right.
So lots of people have done it since. As far as we know, and please somebody correct me if I'm wrong. This was 2006 in May. If I'm wrong, let me know because I don't want to keep claiming something that's not true.
Oh, my little dog just came up to me. Hi, Bitumen.
Hi, Bitumen. John has the coolest dog.
Annie Benanny says hi.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
Ah. My facts are weird. So weird, you didn't have to make anything up.
I actually didn't make anything up. I didn't have to. This for me was the laziest show prep ever.
There you go. If you get people to ask cool questions.
That's right.
I'm going to look through the questions real quick and see if there's any that I'm just burning to answer.
I have a few more if you want them. I can sure. give you a couple of quick technical questions you can answer real quick.
Okay.
Eddie Rice Jr. of A Number One Best Events asks, what's the best balloon pump to get the job done?
Really just depends on who you are. I like the Filbert, but I like it because it's really, really light. But it's also, it's got little places where you can put your balloons when you've inflated them, if you need to inflate several at a time. Mm. That's my favorite, but really best is subjective.
Yeah.
I also really love to be able to mouth inflate. I don't at a long gig. I have very few long gigs. I don't usually mouth inflate if I'm at a gig, but it's really convenient because I don't have to carry a pump around.
Yeah.
And usually for my summer shows, I often prep in the car because it, as you know, it takes a long time to get anywhere and you never know what traffic's going to be like. So if I have to prep, I mean, if I have to be at the library, I will probably get there 2 hours early. I'll be in the area. And then what else am I going to do with my time? I'm going to prep my show. Oh, and yeah. Usually I'm a couple of shows ahead. I don't like to leave the prep for that show right before the show because anything can happen.
Oh, I see.
So I'll just sit there and mouth inflate prep balloons in the car. Because I can find shade and I've got air conditioning and great music. So,
right.
Or a podcast.
And a cool podcast. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Podcasts have saved my life.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Especially in that LA traffic. Goodness.
Yep.
All right. So Eddie Rice Jr. also asks, how do you deal with those long twisting lines?
Be entertaining. Mm. People do not want to wait in a line. The kids will wait forever, but the parents will get so angry. But if you're entertaining and you get the parents on your side, oh my gosh, I can't see anybody because lately I've been sitting down. If I do a longer gig, I can't see anything. So I need your help. You guys, can you figure out who's next? You guys keep track of it. I can't see everything. You know, just anything you can do to engage the people in line. Mm. And especially the parents, people really are great about entertaining the kids a lot of times, but sometimes the parents need to be entertained too. So sometimes we'll have conversations about raising kids sure. things like that. And sometimes yeah. we'll have conversations about, you know, and then I'll just do funny stuff. But again, I'm not one of those people who can remember jokes. So I have some routines that I'll do sometimes if it's right. But just generally, pay attention to the kids.
Yeah.
Be silly. And, let them be silly.
And have fun with the parents.
Right, exactly.
Sure. And then how do you end the line?
Oh, I'm the worst in the world at ending a line.
Oh, no.
Absolute worst in the world. One thing that I've found that works for me specifically is that I tell everybody, no, I'm not doing any more balloons, because you have to close it like 45 minutes before when I'm twisting, right?
Yeah.
So I will say, okay, I'm stopping at 4 o'clock, but at 4 o'clock, if you want to come back, I'm going to teach everybody how to make their own balloon. It's going to be quick. It's going to be awesome. And then that actually gives them, they're not so disappointed that they don't get anything.
That's a great idea. All right. So Owen Anderson, an excellent magician out of Ontario, Canada. Owen asks, do latex allergy concerns ever disrupt your gigs?
Oh my gosh. So not regular gigs, because like if you're at a party or at a library or anything like that, somebody who has an allergy just doesn't come. Right.
Yeah.
But I have had, and I'm not the only one this has happened to. I know other people who do balloon shows who have run into this, where a school will say, we are a latex free school, which I'm telling you 99% of the time they're not.
Yeah.
Because if they're a latex free school, they would have to have alternatives for not only things like rubber bands and erasers, so much stuff like floor covering for gymnastics and just all this stuff has latex in it. So
yeah.
It's really hard. But what they really mean is they're a balloon free school because supposedly somebody has an allergy. I don't know. I understand. It's just like the peanuts thing. We don't want to take any chance because these children are precious. Let's just not have it. And I get it. I get it. I totally understand. But it's frustrating because if you do the research, and if you know what I do, I'm not giving balloons to everybody. It can be set up so that it's nowhere near the kid who's allergic.
Right.
It's a big room. But I don't get into that because I really don't want the conversation to be about that. I want to be that person who is easy to work with. Mm-hmm. And so that's actually one of the reasons I have decided to expand. It's a small part of the reason that not all my shows have balloons in them now.
Oh,
that's pretty exciting and scaring the pants off me right now.
I didn't know that. What are you doing?
Well, I'm doing, so I've always done school assemblies, but it's usually just been me doing the balloon storytelling show. And now I'm, by the time this is out, I will have Wow Assemblies.
I saw that website, by the way. It looks great.
Well, it's pretty, but it's still got all the Latin text and pictures of my dog. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really not, it's one of the things that I have to finish up this week. She was like, oh, we don't know what pictures to put up. Okay, here's a picture of my dog. Just put it up anywhere you don't know where to put a picture. So they're everywhere. So I'm offering STEM shows. I'm the first woman to be doing the Wacky Science Show, which is the wonderful Doug Shearer.
Yep.
Wrote that. He's amazing. Doing a math show. I'm doing the Wormtastic Recycling Show, which is about worms.
Oh.
And how worms recycle. It's about how the earth recycles. Steve Trash, I don't know if anybody knows him. He is also.
Yeah, I had him on my podcast.
Oh, you did? You did? Yep. I remember. He helped me write that because he is such a generous person.
He's a great guy.
Super awesome. And if anybody, by the way, he has a PBS. For anybody who didn't listen to your episode, he's got a PBS show now. Just look for Steve Trash Science or something like that, and you will find him if you can possibly help promote that show. It's awesome. It's very, very funny. Of course, I've got Family Nights. Buster's going to do a couple of shows there, and then Suzanne, Harry, and I do a show together. That one definitely does have balloons, and anything Buster does has balloons, but I've got enough shows that don't have balloons that if a school says, I'm sorry, we can have balloons at our school, I do have an alternative.
All right. We're going to go to Brett Bolich because he has something super fun. He's a fantastic SoCal magician and loyal listener to the Variety Artist Podcast, says, ask her about the horror story I was involved in.
Yep. He should have said, where I saved your butt.
Oh, so what happened with you and Brett?
I got booked at the Segerstrom Center. which is a, for those of you who don't know, it's a big performing arts center where they're having this special place where they had Christmas stuff. It's outside. Those who know me know this, but those who don't know me know that I've been limping for a good 3 years before this. It wasn't Christmas 2018, it was 2017. Mm-hmm. Right about this time, I find out that I need a new hip, even though I'm, as Christopher T said, I'm hip surgery young, just something I was born with. They finally figured out that, no, you really do need a new hip. Okay. Oh. But I was in so much pain the whole last year before the hip surgery. It wasn't how can I make my shows more exciting, but how can I survive my shows?
Ooh.
Especially that Christmas, because it was really bad. And how can I survive them without using a cane? Yeah. So he's helping me the first time, because I knew that the load in might be a pain. He's just such a wonderful friend. So he's helping me load in. Then I realize when I'm loading in and setting up that I have forgotten my 6-foot balloons. If you find out the reason someone hires you is they love the idea of a giant human snow globe, mm-hmm. you better have it with you.
Yeah.
So luckily this isn't very far from my house. So I gave him my keys and I said, would you please go get it? I told him exactly where it was. And I said, just my dogs, they love you. Just make sure they don't fly out the door because one of them's crazy. I told him exactly where to get it. He went all the way back to my house, which is about a 15-minute drive, got into the balloon closet and found what he needed, pet the dogs, and then left, and then came back, and he got there about the middle of my show.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh my gosh, he saved my butt, because there was no way I had time to go back.
All right. Conrad Cologne, a terrific magician out of New Jersey, asks, what is Annie most excited to work on in 2019?
Well, actually, I'm really excited. I told you one of the things that I'm changing my business.
Yep.
Also, I am creating a course. I have been doing balloon storytelling literally since 2003, maybe earlier than that. I've decided it's time to share, and I'm working with ZV Kiwi. If anybody knows him, he is Kids Entertainer Academy and Balloon Artist College. Really fantastic educational stuff. This course is going to launch in June is when it's going to be ready, but we didn't want to wait that long because I did a thing at CAX. I did a lecture on adapting a story, and then I did a lecture back in the summer at Kadabra about balloon storytelling in general. And so people really want this course already. So we're going to have a 6-week beta course beforehand. Mm-hmm. It's partly to help me develop it and partly just to have something ready sooner. It's going to be all live. Whoever gets the course now for the beta gets the course for like way cheaper than it's going to be, but also you get this 6-week experience and it's going to be really amazing.
So it's going to be live on a webcast where they're actually going to be seeing you doing things, or how does that work?
Yeah, I'm going to do like a little bit of a lecture. It's going to be the 6 steps that you need from wherever you are right now, not doing any balloon storytelling, to be able to develop your show, pick the stories, develop your props. Mm. Get all your marketing materials together and perform your first show. So that's going to be the 6-week thing. It's the same things we're going to cover in the class, but it's going to be a live experience for whoever's involved in that part. And the stuff is going to be recorded. So if there's 1 week they can't make it, it's not going to keep them from learning that part soon. So it's really just going to give them a jump start on everybody else.
That's great. And they're going to actually get personal advice from you specifically.
Exactly. I'm thinking we can even go as far as, if we have time, have them show me, 5 minutes of video from what they're developing, and I can give feedback on that. It's going to be fun. It's going to be amazing. We'll have links in your...
Yeah, I'll put those links in my show notes so someone can contact you that way.
There's also going to be, if they want just a little bit of... It's kind of a fun little treasure map kind of thing that's really cute that we came up with. And if anybody wants that, just kind of give them an overview. They may not understand all the steps, but just to show them, here's how you get there. It's kind of based on the same 6 steps. I'll give you a link where they can get just that PDF.
Oh, good.
You can also see on my Balloon Storyteller YouTube, there's kind of a promo thing for the Dr. Electric show. So you can see that. I'm the worst person for promo videos.
Dr. Electric is the show that you put together that you also made a book into.
Dr. Electric takes over the world. Yeah, I need to really work on getting better at video. So there's not a whole lot on there.
You and me both.
I know. Well, your video is so cool, the stuff that you do. If anybody's ever seen John's show, this is Mutual Admiration Society right here, but John is a mentor. He's one of the people who took me under his wing when I got here, taught me all about library shows, but even more important, all about elementary shows. John's the man.
Well, it's easy when you're working with somebody who knows what the heck they're doing.
Kinda.
So they take this course with you. They sign up for that course.
Well, it's going to be like the regular course where, you know, there's a lecture and videos to explain what I'm talking about.
All right.
But the people who do the beta part are going to get it early. Not only are they going to get half price, they're going to get that 6-week thing. And that 6-week thing, the recordings are only for the people in that 6-week thing. So the people who sign up for it now get that stuff. It's going to start mid-April. So if you buy the course, you don't get that. And you pay the regular course price.
Oh, so if they are part of the beta testing group, they get that, plus they get the course itself.
Right.
Oh.
I think sometimes when you get a price for half course, wait, a course for half price.
Rewind.
I have a course for a nickel. but sometimes when you get a course for half price for being beta, you help work through the final little glitches, but all you get is a price break. And I think that's so important for developing a really good course. It's important to me. I'm not the only one to do this. I'm not the first one to do this, but I've been doing it for a long time. I think I can give a lot of good advice.
I think so. You've already given great advice on this interview. It's awesome.
Oh.
Couple things and then we'll let you go. Piece of advice for the beginner.
If you're just doing regular balloons and you have never done a show before, start making your entertainment, your balloon entertainment, into little tiny mini shows. The first thing I started doing wasn't the Viking thing. It was a knighting ceremony because I'm just a nerd and I know like a lot about medieval times because nerd. I would knight them. I still do it and it only takes a second. And sometimes I just like went into it and taught them about courtly behavior and the way we treat women is based on, you know, but then it became a lecture.
Mm.
If they get a 30-second knighting ceremony, it makes it so special for them.
Oh, yeah.
Sir Edward the Awesome or whatever. There's ways that you can make it silly and fit your own personality. But so little stuff like that where you get little routines that you do that are interactive with the kids, not only is it going to make your performing better, it's also going to get you used to thinking in that way.
Yeah.
Once you start doing that, you won't be able to stop. So just a warning.
No.
Yeah.
Bring those together and suddenly you have a show.
Right. It could be.
Yeah. Great advice.
Thank you. Right,
so give us a couple of a recommended book or two. And then I have one more question for you, surprise question at the end. Okay. So just give us a book or two, and then I'll give you that final question.
Okay. The final question. So book recommendations are really hard for me because every single time I'm reading a book, it's my favorite book and it's the coolest thing ever in the whole entire world. But two books that I keep coming back to that have really super influenced my performing are two books, Purple Cow by Seth Godin and Just About Anything by Seth Godin. But the Purple Cow is really, it's one of the first things that he is known for. And it's really just about not being like everyone else.
Yeah.
I really love it. And then also Book Yourself Solid by Michael Port.
Mm-hmm.
When we started getting busier, we realized that we needed to have a red rope policy. Sometimes you'll spend a lot of time on a client or a market that is just making you insane. If you don't want that to turn you into a person that you hate, let's work with people that you love. Because if you are working with people that you love, they're going to love you.
All right, here it is. The final question. And it's from somebody both of us know.
Uh-oh.
Carmen Telez of CharmandHappy.com, who has one of the top family entertainment agencies in LA, asks, when is there going to be one big Buster Balloon and Annie Benanni duet show, The Balloon Love Story? When are you going to do that?
Never. Because I tell people, always ask us, do you guys do a show together? And I say, no, I want to stay married.
That's it.
Yep, because we're both alpha dogs in our show. And if you've got something where started out where one person is the boss from the beginning and the other person is the assistant, that can work out so well and wonderfully. And boy, you get to keep all the money. That's great. But because we are alpha. And we twist together really, really well because our styles are similar enough that we can do each other's stuff, except for the big stuff that he does kills my hands. But we're different enough that you know, neither one of us is a copy of the other. But yeah, shows. We work really well together when we're writing shows, mm-hmm. really my shows, because he writes his own shows and the ideas come fully formed out of nowhere.
Yeah.
He does tell me his ideas and kind of bounce them off of me, but he's pretty sure he's going to do them even before he tells me. So it's not like I have all that much influence. Again, I work better on a team where I can get advice, but not take it if I don't feel like it.
We're not going to see that show anytime soon is what you're telling me.
No.
Well, thanks, Annie, for doing my show. That was awesome.
It's been super fun.
Do you want to promote any social media or anything else like that?
Sure. I'm Balloon Story on everything except for YouTube. That's Balloon Storyteller only because I can't figure out how to switch it. Also, the new website is wowassemblies.com, and that's going to be Wow Assemblies on everything.
All right.
And in fact, I'm going to try Pinterest too. It's going to be exciting.
And I will put the links for your course and for the PDF so someone can sign up right from your show notes on thevarietyartist.com/episodes. Just go ahead and search Annie Benanni and you can find those links on her show notes page. Thanks to all my variety artists. If you found this podcast valuable, share it with a friend on your social media. That's how we gather an audience, and that's how we can create an entire variety arts revolution. You can join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our guests, like my friend Annie Benanni. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.